STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
Hello there, I'm Melinda the Enforcer. I'm here with Greg Kokel, and we're with Stand to Reason, and this is the hashtag STRS podcast. Our short podcast, you send us your questions on Twitter, use hashtag STRask, and I pose them to Greg, and we put them on a timer, and he's got 4 minutes or less to answer. And I'll just say up front, I apologize for being hoarse and coughing. I have a cold, and we don't have cough buttons in here, but I'm hopped up on cough syrup and cough drops, so hopefully I won't choke while we're doing this.
She's hopped up.
Mm-hmm. So, got anything else to say before we jump in?
I'm hopped down.
That's okay. Meet in between. Let's get going. First question comes. Inkling 43. Excuse me. My church is thinking of offering a Sunday school class on experiencing God. As a $1 apologist, how should I respond? Of course, a $1 apologist comes from Jim Wallace talking about we don't need it. The church doesn't need a bunch of professional apologists. We need a lot of Christians just to be apologists in their place where they're at.
Yeah, what's this, in a sense, the simple thing he could do where he's at in his Christian community? Well, there's a huge problem with, in my view, with the material experiencing God. There's a huge theological problem. I do not think, and this would be an understatement for me to put it this way, let me put it differently. I am convinced that the view that is advanced there is not a biblical view. Now, Mr. Blackaby is, a wonderful Christian man. I'm not questioning his integrity. I'm questioning the legitimacy of his biblical points in which he develops ideas about how to experience God and get God's direction on particulars in life. I have actually written a piece on this, and that was I wrote many years ago just for experiencing God, and then I re-released it in a more expansive form, and you can find it on the internet in 3 issues. Does God whisper? But we also have a booklet. Maybe that's the better way of getting it, which is the Ambassador's Guide.
Well, that's just Blackaby. That's like the whole issue of hearing from God. But we included the evaluation of the experiencing God material.
It started out with Blackaby, and then I reissued that and expanded it to include others that made a similar kind of claim. And the main point that I deal with in that passage is taking the proof texts that have been used to advance the views of Blackaby and those like him, that we make our decisions based on getting messages in one way or another from God, or messages that aren't necessarily clear, but we have to decipher in some way. And what Blackaby calls this is getting our assignments from God. I think the way it's presented is not biblical in the least, but not that God doesn't sometimes give assignments, but this is not the way the Christian life is meant to be lived. And the way I deal with that is I take his proof texts for the view and demonstrate biblically and in context that these verses do not teach what he claims they teach. Now, if the verses that you use to justify a point of view turn out not to teach your point of view, then you have to ask yourself whether your point of view is biblically legitimate. If there are no verses to support it, then it's not biblically legitimate, and it should not be taught as the biblical way.
Because the verses, while obviously God did speak to Moses through the burning bush and these other things, these aren't normative examples of things that God was doing.
Well, this is
and
right.
Blackaby tries to make these normative for every Christian.
Yes, Blackaby's perspective is that whatever happened to Moses can happen to us. And the irony is in Moses' own lifetime, there were two individuals who had that same attitude, and one was Miriam and the other one was, his brother.
Aaron.
Aaron. And they got chastised by God because Moses was unique. And so there is just a problem of how you approach these texts in general. But my emphasis is more on the specific kind of proof text from the New Testament. Mm-hmm. John chapter 10, my sheep hear my voice. John chapter 5, I always do what I hear the Father doing or see the Father doing and the like. And there are many others too. But so I take these individually and I show these don't teach what Mr. Blackaby claims they teach. And if they don't, then this should draw into question the methodology that he builds on them. So for our person who's raising the question, I think two things. One of them is get a hold of the booklet and then encourage the leadership to take a look at some of these passages. Or if they won't read the booklet, go to the passages themselves and work through them based on the information you got from the booklet. It's not that hard. These passages, and it is almost universally my experience, Melinda, when I take people to the passage and work with it in context, never read a Bible verse, they virtually universally surrender the view that they had brought to this text and adopt the view that the text actually teaches, which is not Mr. Blackaby's view. So that would be my suggestion on that.
Okay, if you go to our website and write Experiencing God in the search box, the first one that comes up won't apply, but then the next few do. There's A Solid Ground, Henry Blackaby's Experiencing God, A Critique. There's A Quick Thought, Experiencing God, Frequently Asked Questions, which is mm-hmm. follow-up to because a lot of people right. would ask questions. This is like 20 years ago when this stuff first came out.
Very controversial when I wrote this piece.
And then another Quick Thought, Objections to Experiencing God in Matthew 18, because then you had people saying, oh, did you go to him privately? And because you're criticizing him publicly, but of course yeah. he's a public teacher. So right. anyways, so if you plug in Experiencing God, you'll find those few things specifically about analyzing, and you do a textual analysis. Mm-hmm. You're not just disagreeing with him, you know, kind of authority to authority. You're going to the text and mm-hmm. showing his exegesis is poor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question. Huh, yeah, there it is. I have these marked ahead of time. Enabled by Him asks, how do I become more winsome? See, I thought this would be a good question for you because of your personality type. How do I become more winsome and use tactics questions more when my instinct and personality is to be direct and shoot from the hip? Which your natural personality. What was your nickname early on as a Christian?
Dunamis.
Yes, because you caused more fire than actual.
Spreading more heat than light.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
which is something you've worked on a lot in your life. So.
It is. And this is, I think, the only way out here. This is probably not something that an experience with the Holy Spirit is going to transform overnight. This is probably something that
long
in any individual—
sanctification.
Yes, it's a long process of sanctification. And so I would say pray about it, make it an issue of prayer, and make it an issue of alert self-discipline. I guess the simple way in terms of practical application of doing this is to try to discipline yourself not to make statements, but rather to ask questions, and you only ask the question after you've listened to what the other person has to say. Now, there are a lot of proverbs on this, and I know them because I've read them and I reflect on them. He who guards his lips preserves his life. He who opens wide his mouth comes to ruin. So there's one of many that remind us, as James says, to be quick to listen and slow to speak. This is exactly the opposite of my nature and many listening, and certainly the questioners, it sounds like. But the way to deal with a weakness is to simply work to do the opposite of your weakness. So if you talk too much and you declare yourself too much, you're declaring your ideas, maybe the best thing to do is take a deep breath and ask another person's view and then listen. And when they're done, ask another question. Asking questions and listening is itself a demonstration of a winsome and attractive manner. And, it's not that hard if you practice a little bit to get used to it. It is hard at first because your natural inclination and impulse is to do otherwise. But just alert yourself, take a breath. In other words, slow yourself down internally, then ask a question and listen. Don't be listening to your own thoughts about the next question you're going to ask. Listen to the answer to the question that you just did ask. That would be my best advice for somebody in a circumstance like that.
And something else I think you've practiced from early in your Christian life, ask others close around you to give you feedback. You know, if you're married or if you've got friends that might be with you, you know, they can kick you in the under the table or talk to you afterward just to remind you. That's something you're very good at, is practicing feedback. Mm. Just to remind you, you were a little aggressive there. Okay, next question comes from Charles Kelton. Are we held responsible for immoral thoughts that occur in non-waking states of consciousness, like dreams?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I posed it to J.P. Moreland many, many years ago when I was a new student under him. And he seemed to be a little bit surprised by the question. Apparently, he doesn't have dreams like that. I do. And as I recall, he was a little bit curt with me and said something about having a corrupt mind.
Well, we all have corrupt minds.
Which is obviously the case, you know. But I think his idea was that there's a certain, I mean, maybe he wouldn't answer it this way now. And like I said, this was a long time, but he was dismissive about it and it wasn't much help. Let's put it that way. I think that there are things that I have given quite a bit of thought to this. And I think that there are things that we do in our dreams that we are more like spectators of. If you think about your dreams, and for many people, this is the bulk of their dreaming, is that they are simply watching things happen. They don't have a sense that they're choosing to do these things. However, there are times in my dream where I realize I'm in a dream and I can choose to do things that I will not be held responsible for. Or I think I'm in a dream and I probably won't be. You know, sometimes you're not entirely sure. Incidentally, if you're ever unsure whether you're dreaming or you're awake, you're dreaming. Because you never have that question when you're awake, okay? That's just a test. If you're ever unsure, am I dreaming or am I awake? Then you're dreaming, okay? But in any event, there are opportunities, I think, we have where we can exercise choice in our behavior in our dreams. And then I do think that they take on a moral quality because we are making choices that have moral ramifications, even though they don't have ramifications. They have moral ramifications for our conscience, even though they don't have moral actual ramifications out in the world. You make choices in the world that are wrong, has ramifications for your conscience, and it does damage in the world. But that isn't true with a dream, because the dream is not the real world. And so there are no consequences outside. But if you are an active agent there, I think there's moral responsibility. Not everybody has the ability to make choices in their dreams, but some people do. And I think that's when that
you think if somebody doesn't exercise choice, they're just a passive observer in their dreams?
Yeah, if they're just watching it happen.
You don't think they're morally responsible?
No, I just think it's happening. No, because they're not doing anything. They're just watching something go on. In fact, usually they're not even aware of themselves as a self. They are just aware of the things happening. That's all.
I don't know. I mean, there's probably a lot more fine details to be teased out here. But I think even in a lot of those cases, we're probably more responsible because where do those things come from? They come from our corrupt souls. And, you know, even though we're guilty even for original sin. And so, you know, when those things come out, they're working out in our brains from our corrupt natures. And I think we're even responsible then. Maybe not in the same way, like you said, in the real world or whatever. Because, you know, you've made the point, too, that there's different kinds of sin and variations of sin. But I think those are still sin because they rise up from our natures.
Yeah, well, they may rise up.
I mean, it's coming from within me still.
That's right.
And so there's something corrupt in me that's producing that.
Well, that may be true. But the person asked the question of whether one's morally responsible. And I want to read something out of James here because it talks about a process. And it says here...
yeah, I know. We had a big argument about this at a staff meeting once.
Well, it wasn't particularly about what we're discussing, but it was a similar kind of thing. But the verse seems to apply here. So in James 1, it talks about let no one say, this is verse 13 and following, that when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil. That is, there can't be an inducement to God by evil because there's nothing in him that it would appeal to. And he himself does not tempt him. But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust is conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. There seems to me two different things going on. A temptation based on lust, and then a conception that gives birth to sin. In the case of a person who is dreaming and is not deciding, he is not doing anything, he is just simply watching, yes, the temptation and lust comes from his own nature, which kind of temptation couldn't come from God's nature, but if he's not acting on it, then he's not morally culpable for it, just like any temptation that comes to us comes from our fallen self. But we are not held morally responsible for that because we choose not to act on the temptation. Jesus had temptations, but he experienced temptations, but at the same time, he was not sinful because he did not act on the temptation. So
well,
in the dream, if you're not acting and you're just watching, then I don't see how one is morally responsible for that.
Well, I'm not sure that that's an accurate distinction in a dream. It's not as though the temptation is just there. You're in your dream, you're still doing something, even if you're just observing yourself doing something.
I'm not doing anything. And I'm sleeping.
As you know, full doctrines and views about sin or anything else aren't just taken from one verse. And if this was like an adequate explanation for sin, it seems like unless you act on something, it's not a sin. That leaves out the whole category of sins of omission. Something's not a sin as long as you don't do something.
All right. Well, this doesn't relate at all to sins of omission. This has to do with sins of action. And
so it's not a full explanation for the kinds of sins.
I guess the listeners can decide if I'm misusing this, but I don't see in any way, shape, or form how this is not adequate to apply to our circumstance here.
Okay. So before we wrap up, want to mention that on Saturday, June 17th, Greg is going to be in, Louisville, Kentucky,
right,
doing the Reveal Truth Conference.
Right, with Sean McDowell. He'll be there, too.
The two of you. You can go to reveal-truth.com to get information. And you get information about all of our speakers' events by going to our website, str.org/training/events. Send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRask, and we will pose them to Greg or whoever else wanders here on a Tuesday to do the show and put them on a timer. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokol for Stand to Reason.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.